Hey everybody, Jay Hursko here. And in case you haven't been counting along episode by episode, we just wanted to let everybody know that this is our 200th episode of the Agile Uprising podcast. Never in a million years did we think that we would end up here. It's been through the hard work and efforts of countless guests, of the members of the board, of members of the coalition, Discord server posters. We wanted to send an honest and sincere thank you to everyone who's helped us be what we consider a success. We're 200 episodes in and we show no signs of slowing. So we wanted to just preempt this week's very special episode with an honest and heartfelt thank you from all of us, all the contributors, all the guests, thanking all of you listeners for chiming in, for listening week over week, and to helping us create something that we feel is pretty special. So once again, on behalf of all the Agile Uprising board members, posters, guests, coalition members, Discord members, a sincere thank you. Greetings and welcome to another edition of the Agile Uprising podcast. I am this episode's host, Jay Hursko, and the topic of today's conversation is work in the time of coronavirus. So yes, we're ripping off the title of, Love in the Age of Cholera, old book, old movie. I think it's Javier Bardem's first movie. You may recognize him from No Country for Old Men, big fan of his. And I think he was the bad guy in the last Bond movie, but I digress. So as if you could tell from the topic today, we're going to be talking about the new normal, which is going to be remote and distributed working agreements. Obviously, the coronavirus is running rampant all over the globe. And we wanted to have an episode where we got some experts to come in and talk about how does one deal with this? If you're new to remote work, if you're new to being dislocated, how do you handle it? Tips and tricks, that sort of thing. And we convened an expert panel. We were just talking about imposter syndrome before we started, and I don't even think I should probably be in the same room as these people. So first off, we have the director of collaboration superpowers, the author of Work Together Anywhere, A Handbook of Working Remotely, and a previous guest, Lizette Sutherland. Thank you, Lizette, for joining us.
Oh, it's my honor.
Next, we have a self-described distributed Agile coach, mentor, writer, community rebuilder, and the co-author of From Chaos to Successful Distributed Agile Teams, Mark Kilby.
And Mark, trying to stay out of chaos. Thank you. Good morning.
And last, but obviously not least, Agile practitioner, prolific author. If you haven't read at least three of her books, you're obviously not doing it right. co-author of, again, From Chaos to Successful Distributed Agile Teams, Johanna Rothman. Johanna, welcome back.
Thank you.
So first, I wanted to, on behalf of our listeners, I want to thank everybody for taking time out of their busy morning, afternoon. So let's jump right in. So what we're seeing right now culturally is we're seeing a massive amount of people who are now shifted into this work from home, work remotely model, which is for many of us in IT, it's normal to be distributed. However, for a lot of other people, it may not be. So I'm going to take a trip down memory lane and I'm going to start with you, Lizette. Do you remember your first time working from home, working remotely? And what do you remember about it? Was it a good experience? Was it a bad experience? What were your thoughts when you first had the whole, I'm sitting at the kitchen table logging in?
Oh man, in the very beginning, I was still working for an engineering firm in my early 20s. And every once in a while, we'd get to work from home. And I did it so I could focus because I got put onto a project as a project manager really early on. And I had like a team of 15 people and people were just coming to my cubicle all day long. So my first experience, I mean, this was like in the 90s before the 2000s. So my first experience was really just being at home in order to get something done, to be able to carve out that space for myself, because I couldn't get people to stop coming to my cubicle. I tried office hours and all that other stuff. So it was a positive experience. After that, I was working for a guy, this was like 10, 15 years later, who was building an online project management tool. And of course, since it was an online project management tool, we were all just expected to work from home. I went into the office every once in a while, but it was still, and for that was just luxury because home was always my own temperature. At the office, I was always freezing cold. I don't know if people are out there, but I was just freezing cold. I was bundled in like sweaters and stuff. So for me, it was just like having a normal temperature and just the comfort of being, you know, I had my cats and I was sold. I was like, this is great. Like luxury, you can get everything done and in luxurious settings. That was it for me, really.
How about you, Johanna?
So I think that the first time was when I started my business back in the 90s. I had done some work from home, but not interacting with other people. And this was the first time I actually got on the phone, got online. Remember, we still had mostly text websites in 95. So I had TCP/IP on my computer. I FTP'd files between my computer and other people's computers. And it was nothing like it is now. Nothing. And let me echo Lizette. I almost did, you know, plus a gazillion for you when you said you had the temperature right. I no longer, I mean, I wear a sweater now, but it's just a sweater. It's not a scarf and a large sweater. And yeah. So I, the kind of collaboration I did was very different than what I do now.
Okay. And how about you, Mark?
So I'm going to keep on with that 90s theme because that's when a lot of my work started. And I started in a very different place. So I was doing a lot of U.S. Department of Defense contracting. So remote meant a whole different thing. Many time zones separated, very limited on what you could use, depending on what part of the system you're working on. If I say anything more, I've got to shoot the audience. So I can't say anything. So, but again, very limited in what you could see, very limited in how you interacted, very different than it is now. And so that was a very isolating experience. It does not have to be that way now.
Perfect. Perfect. Well said. So let me ask the three of you this, with this coronavirus and how things are changing, have we, and Lizette said, you know, by gunpoint, it's not the way we wanted to do this. But is this going to be a tipping point? Like, have we cut the Gordian knot and now this is going to be the new normal? Johanna, I'm going to start with you. What do you think?
You know, I'm so bad at predictions. However, I think that people will realize that if they can find a way to have a comfortable workspace and a workspace that works with the rest of their team, I think that they will realize they have been moving towards this. So before we started to record, we were talking about millennials. I am the parent of two millennials, I think. You know, I'm not altogether sure which generation they are. They have been working from home intermittently for years, right? So they've been working between 5 and 9 years or something. And they've been working from home one day a week or a couple days, as Lizette said, when they wanted to get stuff done, when other people were sick, just with the colds and the flu, right? Why expose yourself? And a lot of it is their management, I'm rolling my eyes here, thought it was good that they work more hours. So when can you get more hours? You're not going to stay at the office. You can at least have a real dinner and then maybe work a couple more hours. So, I'm not sure that the Gordian knot is what we want to cut, right? So I have always said I much prefer a co-located agile team. And I prefer agile teams over non-agile, and I prefer people who collaborate and we co-locate. And if we cannot get all of that, then working distributed but in a collaborative fashion, that's what I want.
What do you think, Lizette?
Well, I don't know about tipping points. I mean, I feel like we've had the tipping point already for some. But in any case, what this is going to do is push a whole bunch of people to try remote working that haven't done it before. And a certain percentage are going to totally hate it. And it won't be right for their business. It's not right for everybody. It shouldn't be done by everybody. But there are a certain percentage who are going to see like, oh, actually, it works for me in one way or another. And it's a matter of finding it. So it's going to give a push ahead because the people who are doing it now aren't going to go back to doing it differently than they were before. And there's going to be a certain percentage of the people who are trying it that are going to keep doing it. So there is going to, I don't know if that's a tipping point, but there's certainly going to be a surge of people doing it now because they can.
And I think your statement is spot on because it's a lot like Agile, right? Not everybody should do Agile. It's so you try it, and if it works for you, go down that path. If it doesn't, well, maybe we need to investigate a different way of working.
Yeah. Yeah, I've always said, like, I'm not, everybody says, the future is remote. And for me, the future is choice. We should choose where we're most productive. Some people are more productive in the office. They should totally choose to do that. I mean, my husband tried working from home and hated it. Absolutely hated it. Really just hated it. And he tried co-working spaces. I was really impressed with all of his experiments. And this was years ago. And finally decided to get an office for him and his colleagues. Now, they're allowed to work from home, of course, when they want to. Otherwise, I'd have to divorce him. But he did prefer to, right? I mean, you can't, like, be married to somebody who's like, no, you can't. Anyway. But you know, he prefers to work, do his work there. And great. The future is choice.
Yep.
In my opinion.
What works for you? How about you, Mark? Thoughts?
Yeah. So I definitely agree with Lizette that it's going to be polarizing in probably a few ways. So you're going to have those that they've got pushed into it, but they've been curious. So they're going to go, all right, this is my chance to experiment with this. So they've kind of been given the opportunity. Others are going to be forced into it with kicking and screaming, and I get that because it is a personal choice, as Lizette said. I think also there's going to be some polarization around companies because there's going to be some companies that will support this well and some that will say, you know, this is 30 days, maybe 60, we have to get through this. We're not going to invest in infrastructure and it's going to be a horrible experience for everybody. Mm. And those companies are probably going to lean more toward we need everyone in the office, and there's going to be others that go, hey, this wasn't so bad, maybe we should invest more in this, maybe we should support our staff more, they seem to be happier, more productive. So I think there's going to be polarization even in the organizations in that support and don't support.
Well, and all three of us have said that companies, it's in their best benefits to be remote first, whether or not you allow people to work remote or what it is, that you have the processes in place to be able to do it. And in the past, I always used, like, you know, you want to wait for the plumber or, you know, your kids are sick at home. Like, the virus is an extreme case, of course. Nobody expected that. But, like, you know, it does go to show, like, if you have the processes in place, then your business is less vulnerable.
Mm. Yeah, when Johanna and I started the book, within I think a month and a half, I had a hurricane here in Florida, and so we had to scramble a little bit in our process to make it work. But because we were already prepared, we had infrastructure support, we got through it, and we got the book out still in record time.
So I want to talk a little bit about this resilience thing, right? You didn't actually say the word, Lizette, but and Mark, you inferred it. But teams who have, and companies who have the ability to do remote first, right? When they think that way, when they say, you know, something could happen, right? We get a tornado, we get a thing, we get a hurricane, we get this coronavirus. If we think about how we make our companies resilient and our teams resilient, that means they have more options. So this is, as far as I'm concerned, this is risk management for adults.
Mm. That's a good way to put it. Is that the title of your next book, Johanna? I have to ask. Risk management for adults?
See, that would no, be book, probably not.
Book 19, 18.
So Mark, you made a remark about, you know, some people are being forced into this, right? And it's going to work. And it's going to work. Some people, it's not going to work. So I want to go around to all three of you and ask, if someone who's listening is, this is the first time remote working, right? This is totally new to them. They've never even dipped their toes in it. What are some of the suggestions you would give to someone who's starting out brand new? I was in the office on Friday, I'm at home on Monday.
Yeah, so I'll start off with that. So this wonderful book called The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy has some wonderful advice. Don't panic. because it is going to be different. You're used to turning to colleagues and you know, with video here, you see me doing that. But now I don't even know how to get a hold of my colleagues because maybe I'm not familiar with how to use a chat tool, or we don't even have a chat tool in our company. That could be the other issue. So how do I even reach out to people? So if they're not prepared, again, if the company's not prepared, if the infrastructure is not prepared, that's going to be a very rough experience for those individuals. But the organizations that have made some preparations or do have some of that remote first attitude that Lizette mentioned, they've given the choice, which all three of us have talked and written about in the past. They're going to have that flexibility to start experimenting and seeing, okay, I'm starting to see how this works. But even myself, working with distributed teams for a year, when I first worked with my fully distributed team 6 years ago, the first one, it took me about a month really to get dialed in. And I had years of experience with clusters of people and working as the sole remote person. But when everyone was remote, it took me a while to kind of dial in. And that's when I started writing more about that experience. So hearing that experience would be another part of that.
Okay. How about you, Lizette?
there's so many things going through my head. One thing I would say is try to find a comfortable workspace where ideally if you can separate work and life. And I mean, I know it's super hard. I live in, it's just my husband and I in a house. We have a very large house. I've got my own office in the attic, a total luxury situation. And still I have to have this little sign on the door that says occupied or not occupied, because he'll just come in like, hey, how's it going? Like, and
what do you want for dinner? That's the question I get. Yeah. Right?
Sorry. Yeah, absolutely. It's exactly that. So I can only imagine that if you have housemates or if you have a family with children or these kind of things, that finding a space if you don't already have one is going to be harder than people expect. Like to really find, a kitchen table might work, but if everybody's around all day long, you just don't know. So it's a matter of experimentation. And then my next tip is always create an agreement with your team on how you're going to work together. Like talk about what information are you going to share and where is it and how are you going to talk to each other? How do you know what each other are doing? Do you need to know? Like setting goals and maybe retrospectives every week, of course. But the one thing that I would say is really be kind to people in these times and train them on how to use the tools, because so many people are embarrassed to say, I can't use Slack. I mean, I was watching, my husband is using Slack. I mean, my husband runs a tech company. He is a programmer and entrepreneur by nature. So I'm watching him set up Slack and like navigate around. And, he doesn't know how to use the threads yet or speaking in emoticons, like some of the things that some people are fluid with. And I'm just thinking like, man, there must be tons of people out there that don't know how to use these tools properly and are way too embarrassed to ask. So I would say for teammates, really start to one-on-one just help each other out in that way.
And I think you bring up a good point, Lizette, with empathy, right? Like to the point where we're doing this by gunpoint, more forcing people to work remotely, we all need to have a little bit of patience with each other, because some of us will grok to it and it's just okay. And then others will have a tough time with it.
Oh yeah. I mean, people think in very different ways. I've worked with super smart people that are doing like things I could never even dream of doing. And yet they don't understand threads and Slack, no matter how often you explain it to them, just don't get it. Like, and those, in that case, you just have to be like, serenity now, like we're going to get there. but I mean, that's the kind of attitude I would think in these times is kind of warranted.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Joanna?
We didn't choose this.
Right.
It's true. So a couple things that are concrete. Get a good headset and a microphone, and get a good camera. If JR, do you ever post the videos of these?
We record them, but I don't usually post them. I could if you want.
So maybe just a picture of all four of us where we all have a headset. We all have, Lizette's mic is not shown. I'm not sure where it is. But all of us have really, in the headset. Oh, okay. I have really cheap stuff. and with a $50 headset and a $60 camera or whatever it is, right? It's, I have exactly the tools I need to be able to start collaborating. And so Lizette and Mark both talked about some kind of a chat tool. If you have headset, mic, camera, and a chat tool, you can then figure out what else you need. You can bootstrap yourself. I mean, everybody needs access to everything. This business with licenses has got to stop, right? Mm-hmm. Insufficient licenses. People at home might not have sufficient bandwidth to really collaborate, mm-hmm. and the company owes them that bandwidth. Just mm-hmm. pay for extra bandwidth for the next 2 or 3 years, right? I mean, just 5, right? Whatever it is, just do it. And this is a cost of doing business that you now have. You have a different cost of doing business now that people are not in the office, and you can turn down the heat, you can turn up the AC, you can make the temperature not comfortable for humans, and what you save on the heating and cooling costs, you can apply to bandwidth and little bits of infrastructure that make all the difference in the world.
I forget who said it. I think maybe it was Lizette, a comfortable chair, right? So I know this is bad audio, but I am a man of larger carriage, right? When I first started working from home, I was sitting on a kitchen chair and it was not good for me. I couldn't wrap my head around the whole idea about being cold at work. Again, the idea of being cold at work to me would be like me saying I'm pregnant. Like, I can't wrap my head around it because I'm always hot. I'm always hot. But to that point, creature comforts like temperature, like a comfortable chair. And even when you said, Johanna, you know, have a headset and microphone, have one that's comfortable. You know, don't get an in-ear earbud. If you don't like wearing earbuds, don't get an in-ear microphone and headset. Get ear cans, right? Get something that works. I think all those little things all add up to a much more positive experience. I even have desk fans all over the place. I have them all turned off because I don't want it to sound like we're launching a jet over here. So now let's look at the other side of that. So we have a bunch of people again who are now working from home for the first time. What are some common mistakes? I'm going to start with you, Lizette. What are some common mistakes people make? And what should they look out for as, oh, I'm doing this and I probably shouldn't because it's going to, like having a bad chair, right? Or trying to post up at the kitchen table. What are some things people need to watch out for themselves and say, I probably shouldn't do this. I should think about a different solution.
Oh man, that's a tough one. But the first thing that jumps to mind is boundaries on your time. Because it just seems like people tend to overwork rather than underwork. And when you're in your creature comforts, there's just no reason to stop, especially if you like what you're doing or a deadline or you're stressed, it has to be done. And so I just think I would say experiment with what boundaries are going to work for you. Like for me, after 9 p.m., I work between the hours of 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. Not that I'm working 12 hours, but that I agreed with my husband that before and after that, like for sure no workshops. And, you know, because I'm scheduling stuff with New Zealand and all, you know, I'm like, woohoo, let's do this. You know, it gets out of control. But so that I have a hard stop then, and then I don't do anything. I leave the office, I shut the door, and I just, wherever things are at, I just drop it. And it's super hard, super easy to say. And, you know, my mm-hmm. husband's about to go on vacation, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I could totally break the boundaries. That was the first thought I had. So I'm going to just say to people, really put boundaries on your time and move your body, whatever movement you like, just go move.
How about you, Mark?
So when people start getting plugged into their tools, they will sometimes forget that they need to over-communicate compared to what they do in the office. So sometimes they might drop a request in chat or something and assume, oh, somebody's going to immediately respond. Well, maybe not. So you might have to use some of the chat functionality to call out specific people or maybe post in a few different places. So don't assume if you put some communication in one spot that it's going to be heard or seen right away. So it's that, just over communicate slightly. When people start telling you, yes, you told us that already, or you asked already, you've done enough. You've hit the boundary. You're good. So
I tried that with my wife, Mark. It didn't work too well. Just as
yeah, but you're co-located.
Yeah, we are legitimately co-located.
Yes, you are.
That's a story for another time. Johanna, how about you? What are some common things that people will do that they won't realize they're doing it wrong until after?
So I'm going to talk about this from the management perspective. A lot of managers in a co-located environment still do a lot of management by walking around and listening. And you cannot really do that with a dispersed team, right? Where are you going to walk? Well, first of all, you still take walks, right? What Lizette said, make sure you get up and move around. And secondly, this is an opportunity for you to have one-on-ones and say, I really want to understand what you're doing. I do not want to micromanage you. I don't know how. Please help me understand so I understand the state, so I understand where you have impediments, where I understand where you need help, where I'm inflicting help, where you might need coaching. I mean, all that stuff. All the same stuff you would do that you would pick up from your co-located team or your co-located people, you need to be explicit about. So that, quote, over-communication that Mark talked about, that's not over-communication. That's saying, I need to know how to manage now that we are not all together. And please help me.
Okay. I will say we're nearing the end of our time. I want to be conscious of everybody's morning, afternoon, in Lizette's case. So I'm just going to go around the horn real quickly. Any final thoughts, any final tidbits you want to throw out, something that just popped in your mind? And I'm going to start with you, Mark. Any final thoughts on this? Where can people go if they want some more information, anything like that?
So, I mean, each of us are putting information out on our websites and social media. So mine, markkilby.com. You can find me on Twitter and LinkedIn as well. We're trying to help with information that we're pulling together, and also I'm answering questions in several Slack communities too. I'm not going to say which ones because I'm already getting overwhelmed there. So, but just kind of connect with us on social media, ask us questions there, and you know that's a great way to for us to kind of help out.
All right, Johanna.
So I'm going to sound like I'm a commercial right now. But Mark and I did this assessment instrument with comparative agility. So if you think you are doing it right and you want to take this assessment, I don't know anything about prices, right? Don't ask me that. But that's a way to think about it. Mark and I have two workshops, online workshops already available. And we are working on the third, which is the quick start. We were working on the management one. Now we're working on the quick start so that you have something that you can say, oh, right, I do need a comfortable chair. I need a microphone. I need to think about working agreements. So, and I'm Johanna Rothman everywhere. I just wrote a series about team resilience that I was not specifically writing about when I had this idea for the coronavirus. But if you think about how resilient you can make you, your team, the greater organization, and the entire company, you are probably going in the right direction.
Okay. And Lizette?
Oh man, there's so many thoughts. The coronavirus is, it appears to be a very serious situation in terms of, it's a global pandemic, like official now. And so, it's to be taken seriously. And I would just use this opportunity to learn as much as you can from this bad situation. And maybe it's that totally doesn't work for you and it's not right, and that's also okay. And maybe it pushes the organization in a new and better direction. And we can only hope that there'll be some silver linings from this. And I guess one thought I would just have, something super simple, but I'm just gonna say to people, try turning the videos on. Just try it. Just try it. Like 5 minutes of the first meeting, just turn it on and then turn it off again, and so then turn it on to say goodbye. But I know most people really hate it, but I want to just to me, I'm like, it's the age of video. When I go into workshop, I'm like, people, there's no going back. But in this audience, I want to be a little more gentle because I know people hate it so much. But I would just say, just try it. It's so much better.
It makes me think of a story at my current job where we started to do virtual PI planning. And I reached out to one of the AV guys and I said, hey, is there a way that, you know, we can force enable people's cameras on their laptops to turn on? And he got quiet for a second and he went, well, I'm not sure I can do it, but I'm pretty sure the NSA can. So if you have any, and I'm like, okay, I get it. My question was, I did not have malintent, but I could see where someone would take that the wrong way. So yeah, let's avoid the whole idea of turning cameras up. But you're right, Lizette, just how visual communicators we all are. Just turn the camera on, you know, get comfortable with it. You'll pick up on things that you normally wouldn't pick up on just by looking at someone.
Yeah, just give it a shot. You're trying stuff anyway. Might as well try this. Just add it to your list. Super easy to do. And it's super fun. I mean, Zoom has great virtual backgrounds. I put myself in a forest today. People can't see it because I'm getting so many requests that it's like I'm getting kind of hyperactive. So I'm trying to find ways of just like, I have to calm myself down a bit because it's very exciting in some ways because you can help so many people. So it's like, but I mean, you know, like the virtual backgrounds are really fun. So I would say like there's some benefits to turning on the video. Like you can do some fun stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
My teams have great fun with that.
Oh, yeah.
Including video in the background. I don't
know if you could do exactly. Yeah. You could totally. Yeah,
I think my boss would stab me because I would have way too much fun with it. I finally learned in WebEx how to turn your camera. So I'll turn to the side and change the angle, and I'll go, and I'll be acting like I'm talking to myself as I'm switching the angle back and forth.
Totally.
Lizette's here on the bridge of the Enterprise.
I'm on the Enterprise, yeah.
All right, well, I want to wrap us up. On behalf of all of our listeners, Johanna, Lizette, Mark, I want to thank you very, very much for doing this last minute. We literally set this up in less than 36 hours, so I really, really, really want to thank you all for taking the time. On behalf of the four of us, I want to thank all of our listeners. We hope you enjoyed the episode. We have sites all over the place. There's a Coalition site. There's a Discord site. We're not Slack users. We're Discord servers. There's a vibrant server there with a lot of conversation going. You want to hop in and talk about remote work? Here's your chance. Not going to belabor everyone and all the typical blah, blah, blah we give at the end of the episode, but we hope this helped out. If you have any more questions, feel free to reach out to me directly. Find us on Twitter or in the server. We will have plenty copious show notes with this episode, the links to everybody's websites, books, and whatnot. So once again, on behalf of all of our guests, this is the Agile Uprising Podcast, signing out.
Endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. To serve others in ways that promote human flourishing and create a ripple effect of transformation for generations to come. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.